Visits by Our Friends from the Other Side by Tom Harrison. The purpose of this book to share with as many people as possible the wonderful experiences of our family home circle in Middlesbrough from April 1946 to the mid-1950s, to interest those not actively involved in psychic matters and to help and encourage those who are. Everyone who sat in our circle was convinced of the genuineness of the exceptional phenomena they witnessed in such homely surroundings. Their personal thanks and letters said it all. It happened as I have recounted it, 97, without any financial or material gain ever being contemplated. My mother would have abhorred the very thought. Any motive therefore for deception, trickery or having to make something happen was completely non-existent. My personal notes made immediately after each weekly sitting are the major source of information for this book. What you will read are facts, not fiction. Genuine eyewitness testimony. There must be complete sincerity and harmony of purpose amongst the sitters, each willing to give for the benefit of the whole. There is no place for egotists or self-seekers. Give your room a friendly, cheerful and loving atmosphere, where your spirit friends will be happy to accept your very warm welcome and make their presence felt in the manner they find most suitable at that time. As you progress, always be ready, as we were, to make any changes they may advise. Wishing you all success in your endeavors. Tom Harrison. Setting the scene. Six of us started in April 1946, but we were soon joined by Mrs. Hildred and Mr. Jones, making eight who sat every week, except for an agreed annual holiday break, until the mid-1950s, when for health reasons my mother was unable to continue. She underwent many operations for cancer and passed over in 1958. Our medium, 97. My mother, Minnie Harrison, the youngest of 10 children in the Besant family, who were all mediumistic in varying degrees. Parental encouragement enabled them to develop in an uninhibited environment, and my mother was both clairvoyant and clairaudient in her teenage years. By the time we started our home circle, she was 51 and had been a trance medium for some years. It was this type of phenomena, therefore, that we were anticipating when we started, but little did we know what wonderful and unexpected experiences were in store for us. My father, 97. Thomas Henry Harrison, 97, known generally as Tosha, not mediumistic but provided much psychic power. Sydney and Gladys Shipman, 97, are good friends and hosts. When the sittings in our early years were held in their sitting room behind their baker's shop in Middlesbrough, a master baker and company director, Sydney was brought up in a spiritualistic environment and is very mediumistic. A very practical type of man with a perceptive outlook, 97, certainly not one given to self-deception or naivety. Gladys became interested in spiritualism after they were married in 1937 and became a keen worker for the movement. A good businesswoman and fellow director in their company. They now enjoy their retirement in Robin Hood's Bay, where, although in his mid-80s, Sydney still pursues his lifelong enthusiasm for propounding our psychic truths. My first wife Doris, the second eldest of 10 in the Hudson family, a well-known local spiritualist family, a state-registered nurse and midwife, the devoted mother of our six children. Doris was quite mediumistic and very artistic, but at the same time very practical and down-to-earth. A real family woman, she was never happier than when surrounded by children. Myself, 97, an only child, 97, brought up in a spiritualistic environment where I met Doris. Modest healing powers with some mediumistic awareness, but more of a power giver. Like Sydney, I have a no-nonsense investigative outlook and cannot abide any semblance of pretension, 97, especially when mediumship and psychic matters are involved. Member of BRID. Inst. Management. Mrs. Florence Hildred, 97, Gladys's widowed mother, whose husband Sam had passed over suddenly in December 1945. Sam Hildred soon became a first-class regular communicator through the trumpet. A most likable and friendly man, he obviously enjoyed his weekly chat. Spoke in a very clear voice and in his own unmistakable manner. Mr. William Britton Jones, F.R.C.S.97, a noted and highly respected surgeon in the Northeast, was superintendent of Middlesbrough General Hospital for many years. an enthusiastic and lively man, with a wealth of investigative experience. From the spirit world, 97 we had numerous helpers and regular visitors, but there were a special few whose guidance and support was particularly valuable, and whose names you will find occurring quite frequently throughout this book. Sunrise, 97 A North American Red Indian, 97 My mother's main guide and our circle leader on the spirit side. A completely dependable and faithful chief in every respect. He was the organizer and protector, 97 the link man in today's parlance, 97 with specific responsibility for the safety of the medium from interfering or malevolent spirits who do not understand the serious damage they can cause by their spontaneous actions. He stepped in on a number of occasions over the years. Antig, 97 Mrs. Agnes Abbott, 97 One of my mother's elder sisters who was a very well-known medium at the Marylebone Spiritualist asked, now the SAGB, in London, from the mid-1930s until her passing to the spirit world in 1942. Like my mother, a very homely and unassuming woman who always found the time to help those in need. A kindly person who would never speak ill of anyone, but strong enough to speak out when needed. Granny Lumsden, 97 Doris's grandmother on her mother's side, passed to the spirit world in 1930s about their dead son. But the friendliness continued. Would you like a cup of tea? Many thanks, I replied. As Mrs. Fletcher went through to the kitchen, a rough-haired terrier bounded out and immediately sat down in front of me, tail wagging vigorously, ears pricked and whining rather than barking. Most unusual, remarked Mr. Fletcher. He's not usually so friendly with strangers. But as I explained to them, he wasn't looking directly at me, rather over my right shoulder where no doubt James was standing behind me. Yes, this was James's dog, Rags, and he was welcoming him home. Mission accomplished, I thought. 97 and I would be leaving after I had enjoyed my cup of tea. But not so. As Mrs. Fletcher handed me the cup of tea, she rather diffidently said, 97 we're Catholics, you see, with all the attendant implications. I immediately offered to leave and assured them I had no intention of offending their religious beliefs or principles. Oh no, she said, we would like to talk to you, and her husband nodded in agreement. From then on Mrs. Fletcher did most of the talking, 97 A mother's natural love for her only child being very evident. I explained briefly about our small group and how we had heard their son's voice last Saturday evening. They listened intently and with obvious interest. There was certainly no indication of any feeling of disbelief. Although it was a few days past Twelfth Night, I noticed there were still a few Christmas decorations in the room, 97, but that is not unusual. What was unusual, however, was the reason they were there at all. During our talk, Mrs. Fletcher told me she had a strange feeling around Christmas time to get a tree and decorate the room as they had always done when James was alive. The feeling was so strong, although she had no idea why, that she unpacked all the decorations which they had put away and never used since James died, 97 over 6 years ago. She now realized, she said, why the feeling was so strong this particular year and felt so very pleased that she had done it. I now felt that my visit had not only been instrumental in getting James back to his home, but equally important, his mother and father were aware of his presence and happily accepted the situation. The mist which James had been unable to penetrate had now been lifted and the Fletcher family was again complete. The bright light that James had seen emanating from our circle on that Saturday evening had been as a beacon to him, and he came to thank us the following Saturday. 97 this time in a much stronger and clearer voice. That same bright psychic light was also a beacon to many other frustrated, confused or simply lost spirits whom we were so pleased to help over the years. Special note: this is evidence of spirit survival of the highest quality because James came to us that evening as a complete stranger and none of us knew anything about him or his family. Yet I was able to follow the sketchy information he gave us and prove conclusively that it was 100% accurate. The overworked excuse, reason so often used by the skeptics that mediums obtain their information from the sitters' minds, without their realizing it, just could not apply in this case. James's joy, and that of his parents, was matched by ours at being able to help them all in such a positive manner. For reasons of personal privacy, the surname and road name has been changed, but all the rest is exactly as it happened. Ectoplasmic materializations, 97. Not ghostly apparitions. As you will see from the photographs A, B and C, ectoplasm is a material substance emanating from the medium. It is used by the spirit helpers, 97. Chemists and scientists, apostrophe 97 inches many ways and is in effect their building material. It is affected by light of any kind, especially white light. And this is why much of this type of phenomena is witnessed in either complete darkness or dim red light. Critics and skeptics regularly use this as a weapon to attack the genuineness of such phenomena, but conveniently seem to forget that we would have no prints of photographic negatives if these were processed in white light. As in photography, a red light is often used in materialization circles like ours, but only with the consent of the spirit helpers. This is extremely important for the protection of the medium who could be severely injured by the use of an unexpected source of light, 97, especially the likes of a torchlight. Such irresponsible actions were a contributory factor in the death of the well-known materialization medium, Helen Duncan, and it was our responsibility as sitters to ensure that my mother was never in such danger. Although we sat in complete darkness for the first 6 months, it did not mean we were unable to see some of the phenomena in the room as our eyes gradually adjusted to perceive things close to us, 97, and in such a small room nothing was more than 4 or 5 feet away from each of us. But better still, 97, on 23rd of November 1946, 97, we were told by sunrise that we could have a subdued red light, thus enabling us to see things even more clearly. We had been having materialized hands for a number of weeks and our spirit helpers told us they were gradually developing the skills required by them to eventually have fully materialized spirit people. On the 7th of December 1946, to our great delight and not a little wonderment, they achieved their aim and my aunt Ig materialized. Clearly visible to all the sitters, in the subdued red light, she stood in the center of the circle, leaned towards me and held my hand, 97, quite firmly and naturally. She then handed me 3 pink carnations and 1 white one, which I well recall gripping so very tightly, 97, fearing I suppose that they would disappear. But of course, like all the other reports we received, they did not do so, and I still have one of them in my collection. Photo D. It was a very moving and significant evening, but only the beginning of so many more exciting and pleasurable evenings to follow. For the following 6 weeks we had no trumpet phenomena whatsoever, but a number of different spirit people materialized at each sitting in the subdued red light. Our spirit helpers were making excellent progress and during all these sittings my mother was sitting in the circle, chair number 1 in the diagram, in full view of all of us. This meant that we could all see both the medium and the materialized spirit at one and the same time. I should perhaps explain that throughout the years of our home circle, although we had many materializations at each sitting, only one spirit materialized at any one time because there was only one ectoplasmic cord, link with the medium. 1 week Mr. Dot Jones' mother materialized and they held each other's hands for a few minutes. Before she left we all heard her say to him, 97 Britton my boy, which he later confirmed, rather emotionally for Mr. Jones, was what she always called him. No one else in the room knew that, and certainly not my mother, the medium, 97, although of course, we did know that Britton was part of his full name. When we were chatting over supper afterwards, Mr. Jones remarked that, being a doctor, he would very much like to feel the pulse of Aunt Egg's materialized body sometime and we agreed to mention it during our sitting the following Saturday. Come the following Saturday evening, Aunt Egg materialized as usual. But before we had any time to say anything to her about Mr. Jones' request, she turned directly towards him, held out her arm and said she had come that night with the express purpose of letting him feel her pulse. Another example of the closeness and friendliness of our spirit helpers who had evidently still been amongst us while we were having our supper and overheard Mr. Jones' remarks. Mr. Jones was delighted of course to have such an immediate response and then felt her pulse. He confirmed that it was quite normal and then added in his typically dry humorous manner, "Thank you, Mrs. Abbott," which he always called my aunt, "you'll live all right." Auntie chuckled and assured us that he was absolutely right. 97. She is still very much alive. Early in January 1947, Sunrise told us that the building process of the materialized forms in the subdued red light was taking so much power that it was doubtful if we would ever be able to increase the illumination much more. We had discussed this with him on many occasions, and he now suggested that we improvise a simple cabinet to protect the building process from the red light. Then, he said, the spirit people could build more effectively in the cabinet and then come forward into our view in a much brighter red light. From this you will appreciate our positive outlook and attitude towards any possible improvement of the phenomena. By the following Saturday evening, therefore, Sydney had fixed the length of blackout curtain material, in plentiful supply immediately after the war, to a suitable length of wood and arranged for it to rest on the picture rail across the corner alcove to the left-hand side of the fireplace. See setting the scene in photo B. This very simple arrangement was extremely effective and remained as our cabinet throughout the many years of our sittings. The 15 inches gap above the curtain to the ceiling held no problems for our spirit helpers. In fact, as we developed, extremely bright flashes of white light were created by them behind the curtain, and because of the gap we were all able to witness them. See later chapter Spirit Lights. From our first sitting with the cabinet on 18th. January 1947, the quality of the materialized forms improved significantly and they were able to stay with us much longer. Frequently Aunt Egg would sit on the empty chair in front of the cabinet and stay for up to 10 minutes, 97, with occasional visits lasting 15 minutes, all as recorded in my notebooks. These longer stays were usually when we had special visitors like her son Terry, Sister Mary, or close friends she had known in Middlesbrough years ago before her move to London. Spirit people materializing for the first time said they found great difficulty in supporting the weight of the ectoplasmic body and robes, 97, especially those who had been in the spirit world for many years. They likened it to our being clothed in a thick heavy overcoat with the pockets loaded with heavy weights, 97, not the easiest of things to stand up or walk around in. Generally the newcomers would move the curtain to one side and stand alongside the fireplace, 97, like Aunt Egg in photo B. I would then go across the room to greet them, shake hands or embrace and kiss them if they were relatives or close friends. When we had materialized spirits for visitors to our circle, I would take them to meet each other and they too would generally embrace and kiss each other. At the end of their visits the more experienced materialized spirits, like Aunt Egg and Granny Lumsden, would simply bid us farewell in their own way and step back behind the curtain. Those not so experienced, however, were unable to do this because of the difficulties with the unfamiliar weight of the ectoplasm. After standing and talking to us for a few minutes, they would usually say something to the effect that they couldn't hold up any longer and would have to go. Whilst they were still talking to us, the ectoplasmic body would gradually sink towards the floor and appear to be going through a trap door, 97, which I can assure you was not there in Sid and Gladys's carpeted living room. What in fact was happening was that owing to their inability to hold the power, the ectoplasm was gradually moving backwards along the floor, into the cabinet and towards the medium, to whom it was connected at all times. These spirits were frequently heard to be expressing their frustration and disappointment as they gradually disappeared, but we were assured by our spirit helpers that neither the materialized spirit nor the medium suffered any ill effects because the whole procedure was completely under their control. As you will have gathered, materialized spirits are not ghostly apparitions. They are people from the spirit world, 97, who are still very close to us, very interested in helping us when needed, and always very, very pleased to have the opportunity to meet us in such a tangible way. Compare it with the feelings of an elderly grandmother in the UK able to fly, for the very first time perhaps, to her children and grandchildren who had emigrated to Australia 30 or 40 years ago. Whilst every sitting was always special to us and we never took anything for granted, 97. There were a number of occasions when something quite unexpected or very different occurred, and these I have recounted in more detail in individual stories, a few of which are included in this book. The Beyond It Seemeth Such a Little Way to Me Across to That Strange Country, 97. The Beyond, and yet not strange, for it has grown to be the home of those of whom I am so fond. Ella Wheeler Wilcox, Aunt AGG's birthday anniversary and her son's wedding day, Saturday 14th, June 1947, was a rather special day for Aunt AGG. It would have been her 62nd birthday anniversary. She died in November 1942-97, and on this day her youngest son Terry was married to one of my wife's younger sisters, Ruby Hudson, at the Middlesbrough Spiritualist Church. The wedding ceremony was conducted by a long-standing friend of both the Hudson family and Aunt AGG, 97 Jim McKenzie, 97 known to everyone as Mac. The organist was another good friend, 97 M.R. Dodd. It was fitting therefore that Mr. and Mrs. McKenzie and Mr. and Mrs. Todd had been invited as visitors to our home circle that particular evening. The phenomena for both couples proved to be very exciting and evidential. We started in our usual way with trumpet voice phenomena. The first voice we heard was very faint, 97 just Bruce, Bruce, and nothing more. Our spirit leader Sunrise then took control of the trumpet and told us that the voice belonged to a young boy who was accompanied by another boy whose names were Bruce and Robert. He then added that burning was connected with both of their passings to the spirit world, but they were unable to use the trumpet to speak to us themselves. Mr. and Mrs. McKenzie immediately recognized them as their son Bruce and his cousin Robert. Robert had been burned to death some years ago as a boy, and Bruce had been so badly scalded in an accident in their home when he was only 11 months old that he passed to the spirit world. Bruce's accident had happened 9 years ago while Mac had been attending to him, and ever since that sad day he had blamed himself for not keeping a closer watch. Sunrise then told Mac that Bruce wanted his father to know that he must not blame himself and that Bruce knew how much he had suffered over the past 9 years. This certainly appeared to ease Mac's mind, as he said at the time. But better still, later during the sitting, Bruce materialized as a young man who had grown up in the spirit world. He was able to talk to his father face to face and comfort him in the most personal way possible. Although Mac had experienced materialization phenomena previously, on this special occasion he was quite overcome, 97, but went home a very happy father indeed. I could not help thinking at the time just how wonderful it would be if only the countless number of grieving parents, relatives and close friends were able to put themselves in Mac's shoes. The world would be a much happier place, I'm sure. After Sunrise had told us about Bruce and Robert, another gentleman then spoke through the trumpet, 97 said he was also James McKenzie, Mac's father. He spoke quite clearly, with a slight Scottish accent and in short-clipped phrases. More good evidence was given to Mac from his father. Later Sunrise said that Mac had felt very bitter about the way his father had acted whilst on the earth, but recently had forgiven him as he felt he had worked out his own salvation. Mac immediately confirmed this was absolutely true, 97, but we in the circle had certainly not been aware of it. His father had left his wife and their children when Mac was only 6 years old, 97, a fact known only to the McKenzies in that room that evening. It is interesting to recall that at another sitting months later, when Mac was a visitor again, his father materialized and they met face to face. Whilst they stood together shaking hands and talking, his father begged forgiveness. In a very emotional moment for both of them, Mac had no hesitation in offering that forgiveness. After more trumpet phenomena, we had our usual materializations with a number of spirit relatives for our visitors. When Mrs. Todd's mother materialized, she appeared quite upset because her other daughter was apparently very ill. Again, this was confirmed by Mrs. Todd and of the people in the room that night, only Mr. and Mrs. Todd were aware of that. Her mother assured her that they were helping as much as they possibly could. Finally Aunt AGG materialized, 97 as always, closing the evening's sitting with her cheerful and friendly presence. As she stepped forward from the cabinet, we could all see in the fairly bright red light that she was holding 5 carnations in her hand, and she was clearly so full of joy to be able to hand them out with her usual well-chosen and suitable words. 1 to Mac, 97 for conducting the ceremony today that meant so much to her. 1 to Mr. Dot Dodd, 97 for playing the organ so well. 1 to my wife Doris to pass on to her sister Ruby, today's bride, 97 with all my love and best wishes. 1 to Mrs. Mac, 97 an old dear friend. 1 to Mrs. Dot Dodd, to whom she said, 97 I think I knew you as Effie. Didn't I, back in St. Paul's Road? 97 and Mrs. Dot Dodd immediately agreed with her. She told us later that that was over 15 years ago when Aunt Jook had lived in St. Paul's Road in Middlesbrough, 97 and even more significant, 97 only Mrs. Todd herself knew that, 97 not even her husband. Aunt Egg then expressed a mother's pleasure about her youngest son marrying such a lovely girl who would look after him and that he had joined such a good, close-knit family. Just before she went I wished her many happy returns of the day and she replied by saying it was the happiest birthday she had ever had, another very happy evening which was so thoroughly enjoyed by everyone involved, 97 particularly Aunt Egg and our spirit friends. And there are spirits, messengers of love, who come at call and fortify our strength. Ella Wheeler Wilcox, thoughts do not need the wings of words to fly to any goal, like subtle lightnings, not like birds. They speed from soul to soul. Ella Wheeler Wilcox. We live. These verses were given through the mediumship of my mother in 1954. They were composed by her brother in the spirit world, Jack Besant, who was killed in a works accident in the mid-1920s and often spoke to us through the trumpet. Mourn not for me my loved ones, for I am by your side. I have not sped to realms unknown or crossed the rolling tide. I do not leave you comfortless. 97 Think not I ever will semicolon so dry those tears, look up and smile, for I am with you still. My eyes once closed are opened, my vision clear and bright semicolon where once I looked through darkened glass, I see perpetual light. The veil has just been lifted and my loved ones gone before are waiting now to welcome me, as in the days of yore. Their love is still enfolding me. Their spirits have not fed semicolon and now I know as I am known. 97 We live. There are no dead. So let your hearts be comforted, cast out all doubt and fear semicolon we live and walk beside you, 97 your loved ones still are near. Grieve not for me my dear ones, just dry those tears away semicolon I'll walk with you through earth's dark night until the break of day. So lift your hearts in thankful praise and join with us to sing, 97 O, grave where is thy victory? O, death where is thy sting? The voice of the dead was a living voice to me. Alfred, Lord Tennyson. The Homeward Road, one of the many poems written on odd sheets of paper found amongst my mother's belongings after her passing in 1958. You have passed beyond our sight along the unseen way, on the homeward journey that we all must take some day. In heart and home you leave a gap that no one else can fill. You have gone, 97 and yet it seems that you are near us still. You're only just a step ahead around the hidden bend, 97 on the road that leads us homeward to our journey's end. Though the sorrows of bereavement linger in our mind, happy is the memory that you have left behind. Photographs, photographs A, B and C on the following pages, were all taken during sittings in our home circle with the complete cooperation of our spirit helpers. This is of paramount importance. Our sole purpose when we discussed the idea with Aunt Egg and Sunrise, was for my mother to be able to see something of the wonderful phenomena which we were privileged to experience each week. Being in deep trance she was completely unaware of what was happening. The thought of publication never entered our heads. When approval was given for a specific sitting, we set up the camera on a tripod, preset the stop and focus and pointed it in the direction of the place where the phenomena would occur. It was all very much hit and miss, with the hope that we might be fortunate enough to get something. We were amazed and delighted when we achieved such splendid results, 97 especially with those taken in complete darkness. Those were taken on infrared plates with a flash exposure of a satellite bulb housed in a wooden box which had a 2 inches square rattan filter set into the front cover. I still have the box, made by Sydney, amongst my memorabilia, 97 together with a carton of unused infrared plates. Compared with today's high-tech equipment, it seems almost prehistoric, 97, but that was 40 years ago and we were only amateur photographers at the best of times.